Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We're broadcasting all over the world. And if you have questions that you would like to ask, but maybe you don't listen in live time because you might live in Portugal or Shanghai, wherever you live, you can email us and I'll give you Luann's email. And you can email it, or you can call in now, because the rest of the program, with a few exceptions, are going to be taking a look at the issues that you find important. And I will be addressing some of the issues that I felt should have been addressed last night, but were not, and the presence in his State of the Union address. In any case, write down these two numbers, please. If you ever want to listen to our program live, call this number. Write it down, 605-562-5119. 605-562-5119. But you can't, let's say, always, so you want to download it from the archives. Here's my archive number, 631-359-9463. 631-359-9463. Now, a couple things. I just got a response of why would the Attorney General, Garland, suggest that to voters that they shouldn't have to have any proof of identification. They should just have the right. And then everyone jumps on board and says, yes, it's racist, you know, it's everything wrong if you ask someone for identification to vote. But at the same time, there are certainly those individuals within this administration and the Obama administration that want people coming in who are obligated to them because of all the free things they've given them and the easy access without any vetting. As a result, decent, honorable people who we should be taking in are mixed in with career criminals, organized crime, sex trafficking. In fact, in one case alone, we're only talking about one case, 85,000 children are missing that were in government care and then given out to people who were not judged to be their actual relatives. And DNA testing showed that the person's bringing kids across the border, their DNA doesn't match. Oh, this is my uncle. DNA doesn't match. They didn't care. And so think of the terrorists that are now in the United States. It's not will we have another 9/11 type of event. It's just when. Are they going to take responsibility for that? Are they going to celebrate that? Look what we caused? No. So I'm going to address specifically what Garland was saying. And you can go up and download that for yourself and take a look at it about valid IDs. And he's saying, shouldn't have one. Okay, you don't want one? Fine. But here's where they require it, where Garland, all state attorney generals, law enforcement require this. Get a driver's license, boarding on an airplane, purchasing a car, getting a car registration, renting a car or a boat or anything, buying insurance, buying train tickets on Amtrak, going on a trip to Europe, you have to have a passport, you have to show photo ID. Picking up mail from your FedEx or UPS or post office. Cashing a check in a bank. You can't just go and say, here's a check, where's your ID? I don't need one. If I don't need one to vote, then why not have one to vote? Is that a hardship? Are you telling me that all the people who are doing these other things that require an ID, photo ID, don't have it? My goodness, what people in power get away with. Renting tools, renting furniture, getting a loan, visiting a doctor's office, a hospital. First thing they're going to say is, give us your ID, your driver's license, give us your insurance, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, whatever it is, private insurance. If you want to donate blood, if you want to get a prescription anywhere in America, if you apply for a job, if you're applying to school, college, university, if you're applying for a professional license, if you're getting married, if you're joining the military, if you're adopting a child, if you're sending a wire transfer, if you're applying for online banking, if you're applying for store credit, if you're establishing a utility bill for lights, electric, cable, gas, if you're getting a credit card, if you're opening a retirement account, if you're applying for a mortgage, if you're buying a house, if you're applying for apartment rentals, if you're renting a hotel room, if you're buying a cell phone, if you're going to court, if you're entering any federal building, if you're getting a business license, and also frequently that's getting a state ID license, if you're cashing in a large lottery ticket, if you're obtaining Medicare or Medicaid, if you're applying for food stamps, if you're applying for welfare, if you're applying for unemployment, if you're using Social Security services, if you're applying for Section B housing, if you're applying for H-18 visa or green card, if you're holding a rally, when I did probably somewhere between 200 and 300 demonstrations in New York. Many of you attended one of those big demonstrations in front of the governor's office on Indian Point nuclear power plant to close it down. I had to show ID, I had to get the license to get a permit. All right. If you're buying a firearm, if you're adopting a pet, if you're applying for a hunting license or a fishing license, if you're going to a pawn shop, they're just not going to take something. You could have stolen it. So, and I've got at least 100 other things that you have to have a photo ID. And yet, all those are done without any question every day. And yet, the moment they want to fix an election, they want to swing the election, put their thumb on the scale to their advantage, and that's all this is about, that's all it's ever about, holding power, then suddenly they come up with some dim-witted idea. Yeah, just want to share something with you on that. Now, I'm going to play a short clip before we go to Luann here. Two little clips, because I think they're very important. I have been warning in more than I took a look at our archives. In the last 3 years alone, 45 programs dealing with artificial intelligence, and whatever they're promising you, what they're going to give you is something opposite. And my biggest concern is there are tens of thousands of these programmers in thousands of companies that are heavily funded with artificial intelligence, and there's no rules. There's no laws, no rules, no regulations. They can do whatever they want, at least up till now. And also, I said, my biggest concern is, what if a person has biases? What if they have anger issues? What if they have ideological issues? They're going to put that into, either consciously or unconsciously, that's going to go into how they program the artificial intelligence. And no one seemed to pay attention until Google's Gemini catastrophe. So that should have been a wake-up call for everyone, where they refused. If you wanted to get a picture of George Washington, it was an African American. If you wanted to get a picture of, let's say, American soccer players, it was all African American and women. Well, there's never been a woman playing in professional soccer, in professional ice hockey. And so everything that you ask for, they showed you a woman or trans person or person of color, which is fine, no problem, if that's an honest, accurate representation. But then it also means the opposite of that, that the chimeric duality of opposites. They're also saying, if you're white, no matter who you are, no matter what your background, no matter what you've contributed, no matter what your living legacy, you are evil, and we will not honor you. You come from privilege. And as a result, everything is a denigration. Once again, it's a form of modern-day racism. My God, these people either have no intellect or no sense of understanding what happens when you take people who have done nothing wrong, are common people, working-class people who just want to help people, and then you jump on the boat with those guys who wrote that foolish book about 40 million rural Americans are racist, misogynist. No, they're not. In fact, in my entire life of living up in the Woodstock area, that's a rural area, all good people. And down in Texas, twice, good people. And out in New Jersey, good people. Now, that doesn't mean they're not bad people, but you don't make every single one of 40 million people the enemy because it in alignment with your political ideology so you can get on MSNBC. So why was none of this discussed at all? But it wasn't. But there were a lot of things not discussed. In fact, one of the things not discussed was why do we have such high prices in medicine? For anything, it's because of private equity. Why didn't he mention private equity? Because he gets money from it. All of them do. Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. It's one, they all try to believe that they are the clean water in a full toilet. All right? That's Washington and state legislators as well. But Dr. Ben Tapper came up with the newest statistic. Americans make up 5% of the world's population, but we consume 65% of the world's pharmaceutical drugs. In fact, Americans take in more drugs than the entire world combined. That means that India and China, that represent almost 3 billion people, we take in more drugs. In fact, 8 drug commercials appear every hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on American television. 8. And Big Pharma spends 1,900% more on advertising than on research. It's all about the profit. And yet, did we challenge the price of drugs? No. He could have used something we did. We took the 10 top-selling drugs in America. We showed their 30-day cost, their generic drugs. And then we showed how much it cost. It was generally anywhere from 3 cents, literally 3 cents, a dime, 20 cents. And then you see what they sell for, $200, $300. We didn't hear anything about how oncology, failing as it has, by the way, give you an idea, when 500,000 plus people die each year from cancer who received all the best cancer treatments, radiation, surgery, chemotherapy, and died, go back 20 years, right? 20 years. How many dead Americans that from orthodox cancer treatment? It's 10 million. 10 million people dying, and there's no sense of humility, there's no sense of openness. Maybe we don't have all the answers. Maybe we should look elsewhere, because elsewhere, there are people doing much better and proving it. Nope. The pharmaceutical companies control everything. None of that discussed. Well, let's just take one look at this. I'm going to play you a clip right now. We're going to go to this clip. Excuse me. This is a clip where how private equity conquered America. This is a small interview with Chris Hedges and the woman who is one of the experts on this. We're inviting her on the program next week to spend a whole hour on the topic. I just want to give you a glimpse of it because I've talked about this repeatedly about the people that I call them economic parasites. And yet these are the people that are invited to be on the President's Council of Economic Advisors. And by the way, there were hundreds of people probably interviewed in different positions like big pharma and banking to say, what do people want to hear in the speech? Now, mind you, it's all lies because nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. But it's a good time to lie to people because you got them all together. And then you got your propagandists afterwards. Oh, wasn't that a great discussion? No, it wasn't. For example, they're concerned about wages. They're concerned about inflation, what things cost. They're concerned about safety. They're concerned about migrants who are not vetted. Those are just a few of the items. Okay, so he gets the input by advisors saying, you behavioralist, psychologist saying, you got to hit on this, 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 and this is rehearsed, and all this input goes in. He's just reading a script. Look at his background. He hasn't done any of the above. But somehow today, they're going to tell you the truth and do it. No, they're not. And I hope people are smart enough to realize that. So let's hear from Chris Hedges right now, because next week I'm going to go into this in depth.
The U.S. economy is being held hostage by a small cohort of financiers who run private equity firms, Apollo, Blackstone, the Carlyle Group, Kohlberg, Kravis, Roberts. These equity firms buy up and plunder businesses, piling on debt, refusing to reinvest, slashing staff, and often driving companies into bankruptcy. The object is not to sustain businesses, but to harvest them for assets to make a short-term profit. Those who run these firms, such as Leon Black, Henry Kravis, Steven Schwarzman, and David Rubenstein, have amassed personal fortunes in the billions of dollars. The wreckage they orchestrate is taken out on workers who lose jobs or see salaries and benefits slashed, taken out on pension funds that are depleted because of usurious fees or abolished, and on our health and safety. Residents of nursing homes, for example, owned by private equity firms, experience 10% more deaths because of staffing shortages and reduced compliance with standards of care. Private equity owns hospitals and has created a health crisis. Nursing shortages have contributed to one of every four unexpected hospital deaths or injuries caused by errors. The private equity firms do not serve patients, but profits. They have closed hospitals, especially in rural America. They cut back on stockpiles of vital medical devices, including ventilators and personal protective equipment. In 1975, the U.S. had about 1.5 million hospital beds and a population of about 216 million people. Now, with a population of over 330 million people, we have around 925,000 beds. 56% of Americans have medical debt, even though many have insurance, and 23% owe $10,000 or more. Emergency room visits, and emergency rooms are often run by private equity firms, contributed to medical debt for 44% of Americans. At the same time, the healthcare system, because of this slash and burn assault, was unprepared to handle the COVID epidemic, seeing 330,000 Americans die during the pandemic because they could not afford to go to a doctor on time. These private equity firms, like an invasive species, are ubiquitous. They have acquired educational institutions, utility companies, and retail chains while bleeding taxpayers of hundreds of billions in subsidies, made possible by bought and paid for prosecutors, politicians, and regulators. Joining me to discuss private equity firms and their assault on the economy is the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Gretchen Morgenson, who along with Joshua Rosner wrote, "These Are the Plunderers, How Private Equity Runs and Wrecks America." Let's begin with what they are. They've just rebranded themselves, but I'll let you start.
Well, Chris, these are the old takeover titans that we started to learn about in the 80s. RJR Nabisco was the big deal that focused everyone's attention on them. And they just rebranded themselves, as you said, into something called private equity. A little bit more genteel, sounds like it actually might be fair, equity being that word. So these are just those corporate raiders that really were sort of fearsome. And, you know, Congress at that time was concerned about what they were going to do to the economy. Congress lost interest and went on to the next thing. And of course, they did then go on to, over the next few decades, really pillage the economy and workers and pensions, as you pointed out.
Explain how they work, because it's all about debt. Right. And what's interesting from your book is that they actually don't put very much money.
That's
but
right.
I'll let you explain just the mechanics of it.
Okay. These firms, first of all, they raise money for their buyouts. They don't use a lot of their own money for those buyouts. What they do is they go to public pensions, they go to endowments, they go to the big institutional investors and say, we're putting together a fund, we're going to buy out companies, we're going to make them more efficient, and then we're going to sell them in 5 to 7 years at a profit, and you will be able to reap those gains along with us. But yes, as you point out, the private equity titans do not put a lot of their money, of their own money at stake here. 1 to 2% of these funds are typically the private equity firm's money. So after they have raised the money, they go out and look for companies to buy. And they really home in on companies that have assets that they can strip
assets. These are often physical assets that they can sell.
Physical assets like real estate. Now, you pointed out that they've taken over a lot of retailers. When that was going on, often they would be buying retailers that had, you know, either very, very favorable leases or actually had land underneath their stores that they could then sell at a profit, stripping the company. It's really not about operating the company, as you say. It's really about stripping the assets, extracting the money that they can from it. It's an extraction business. So they buy a company, they then find out how they can make it more efficient, which means usually firing many people, stripping the assets, selling them off. And sometimes they sell the assets and they get all their money back initially, very, very early on in the process. And what's left really is a carcass. What's left is a company that has now got enormous amounts of debt piled on top of it. These transactions are funded by debt. But it's not the private equity firm that takes on the debt. It's the company they're buying. So if they buy a retailer, they'll put a load of debt on that retailer. Suddenly, that retailer has way higher costs of operating, which means that then they have to cut costs elsewhere, fire people, deplete pensions. It's really a game where a very narrow slice of people win and a huge circle of pain of losers is involved. Everybody else is on the losing end.
Well, because it's about short-term profit, you have an example in the book about a nursing home system. This was an amazing story. And so what they do is they sold the physical buildings that had the nursing homes, and then suddenly these nursing homes had to rent, I think it was $40,000 or something more a month. I'll let you explain. So they actually carry out policies, not just loading it up with debt, but also carrying out policies that physically dynamite or destroy corporations or businesses that before they arrive, you have the story of Samsonite, we'll talk about the steel mill you write about, but that were healthy.
Absolutely. So the nursing home company that you were talking about, Manor Care, it was very well run. The reason that the acquisition was made, and this was Carlyle Group, which is one of the top private equity firms.
And let me just interrupt, because as you point out in the book, they, like James Baker, they pull in heavyweight political figures once they're out of office to run these groups.
Carlyle, unlike the other firms, which are located in New York and are the Wall Street type of folks, Carlyle is a much more, it's based in Washington and it's much more politically astute. And as you say, there's a revolving door with government officials, very high powered government officials. Anyway, they bought Manor Care. It was a very well established, well run national nursing home company. They immediately sold the land under the nursing homes and made the nursing homes pay rent. They took out the equivalent of what they had put into the company. They received that when they sold the land. So they were free and clear. Everything after that became gravy for them. So they really weren't concerned about, you know, the profits. They were already in the money, as they say. But the company, the nursing homes, suddenly had to pay exorbitant rents. And that meant that something else had to give. And ultimately, what ended up happening was an enormous Medicare fraud that was designed to really overcharge Medicare for services to these residents. And the stories are absolutely gut-wrenching. There were some whistleblowers who came forward talking about what they were seeing. And the DOJ took the case, but then blew the case. But some of the tales that these whistleblowers told about forcing aged, frail, ill residents to go through, incredible rehabilitation that they didn't need in order to bill Medicare for these processes.
That's only a brief look. By the way, last night the camera showed Mitt Romney and the West Virginia senator talking together. I wish they would have had a caption that says, "This is how Mitt Romney made his hundreds of millions of dollars, Toys R Us." Very profitable, very well-run company. Not after they come in, they load it with debt. First thing they do is load it with debt, then they charge fees, management fees. And so a well-run company living within its budget now can't. Then after 5 years, Linens and things, Circuit City, thousands of major brands have been destroyed, not because the company was poorly run and not because it wasn't profitable, but because these economic vultures, in my opinion, they wanted a profit. They don't care about it. And yet one of these guys ends up being the president of Channel 13 on the board and another one on Washington, D.C. So who do we go to when we want a prestige name? We go to one of the equity partners. Wow. We have no sense of scholarship, research. Just want to share that with you because the real, if you want to know why your bills are not going to come down, it's because the equity partners own the hospitals, own the doctor's practices, and that's why your emergency to get from your home to a hospital in an ambulance, it could cost you $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000. And you think, why? That wasn't touched. That will never be discussed by either party because these are the people who put money in their pockets. Now we're going to go over and say hello to Luann Panisi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Thank you for all that. Wow. And by the way, when I had my mom taken by ambulance, you are spot on. It was $6,800 to take her 25 miles. So, yeah. Well, I'm getting a lot of emails, and I always love to get these. I hope I don't sound like a broken record, but I love getting these emails from people who used to go to your lectures, kind of like when I met you. I met you in the early 90s, and I have a woman, Jessica, here that says, "My mother brought me to some of your lectures in the mid-1990s. I was 16 years old then. Now I'm 45. I look and feel younger than all of my peers, and the same with my mom. She looks 30 years younger than her actual age, which is 65. And at this time, I want you to know that we acknowledge the fact that none of our friends, none of them, want to make any positive changes. They're amazed at how good we look, but they just don't want to make any changes. It's like they're on automatic. So that said, she says, I think I'm ready to hit rural USA. And she said, my mom went to the Healing Springs Ranch, and she said it was the best vacation she ever took. See, now we live in the city. It looks the same, but the crime rate is rampant. We used to be able to go out at night, and we can't do that anymore. And my mom wants to know, she said, you were everywhere in New York City, and now you're not there anymore. And she said, do you miss that lifestyle? Mom's afraid to move out because she's afraid that she's going to lose all that culture. So it's become very costly to live here.
Okay.
So she says, yeah, go ahead.
From the late 1960s, I was involved all the time in causes, the anti-war movements, but also I helped lead the fight against DDT. Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, set the stage for that, but then she couldn't go out. She was banned on television, but I was young and I was a teenager. And I got on television and had my own radio show and took on that topic and touring around the country. We managed to get some people, not a lot, interested in the topic. But it takes a lot of work. All these causes take work. But then you jump ahead to the 1970s when I had one best-selling book after another, and that requires you to be on the road. You have to go to city, television, radio, and if you bring out three books a year, two books a year, you're going to be on the road about around 90 days. It's a long time to be on the road, even coming back. And I would take my daughter out also. And she'd be on the road. She got to see Washington, D.C. and other places she couldn't see. So kind of incorporate doing media and also seeing the wonderful sights. New York from the 1960s through the 2000s was the place on earth to be if you wanted to be with the best culture of great intellects. Now, they have great culture and intellects around the world, but it's a different type of culture, different types of intellectual discussion. And I engaged in that. I enjoyed it. Now I live a very pastoral life, very peaceful, being with animals. Might want to see friends? Well, they can come and visit, or occasionally, like in the near future, I'm coming to New York, and I won't be there for long, but I'll do a premiere, and I'll do a book signing for my new book, assuming that it gets ready in time. And then I see the city differently. I don't see it as being, for me and my generation, I don't see it having the same opportunities. I see a lot of the culture dumbed down. I've walked out probably 90% of Broadway shows, and other people can enjoy them, and they can be right. But I cannot enjoy it, and I can be right also. It's very subjective. But there was a heartbeat. There was a vibrancy. I don't see that now. I see a different energy in the city. There's lots of good neighborhoods that have yet to, you know, experience vandalism or crime. And you've got to keep this in mind. Every day I read the Metro Report first thing in the morning, and I see all the different people shot, killed, strangled, pushed in front of subways, raped, beaten. But you still have to remember you're dealing with 8 million people. So your chance of being a victim is not great. But once it happens, for people who would never think they would be a victim, it's scary. So if you want to move to rural America, first do your homework. If you want to move with other people in a small community, and they're over approaching 2,000 of these communities around the United States, you know, that would be good. But what I would suggest is if you own a home or apartment and you want to move, buy yourself a slightly used RV, but don't make it a big one because you don't want to replace your home with an RV. You want to replace your home with an RV that's small, gets good mileage, and you can park on the streets. You can drive anywhere, and you should. Give yourself a year just to travel around the United States and ask yourself, am I in the right place at this time? Are these good people that would be a part of my support system? Or unless you want to go alone, in which case then I would not do anything until after the crash. And yes, we're going to have a crash. We just don't know when, but it's going to be a big one, dwarfing anything we've had since the Great Depression. And there's going to be a big pushback, too, at the cultural level. Not racial, cultural, between the have and have-nots. Because the haves are the ones controlling all of our lives, though we didn't elect them. And these are the opinion leaders and policymakers. So let it be seen where people are gravitating to, based upon where they feel safe, have a quality of life. And then you can determine where you want to spend your time going forward from there. Okay, let's do another question.
Okay. This is coming from someone named Eddie. And he said, Gary has covered the blood clots that have been appearing after the injections of the, quote, vaccines. It's my understanding that the only way to determine if there are microscopic blood clots in the veins is through a test known as the D-dimer, as it cannot be determined by an MRI or a CAT scan. Can you address this? Also, I've recently read that according to the autopsy of Navalny, they said that he died from a blood clot caused by the Pfizer shot. Can we verify the veracity of this?
No. No, you can't, and I won't address that because
Okay. There's
an enormous amount of information now about him and his association with the CIA, and so I'm going to deal with that with someone who knows that topic of him background personally. But the D-dimer test, yes. A D-dimer, D-I-M-E-R, test is a blood test that checks for blood clotting problems. It measures the amount of D-dimer, which is the first protein that the body makes to break down blood clots. Even at the micro level of blood clot formation, the D-dimer protein will be activated. A positive test means that the D-dimer level in your body is higher than normal and suggests you likely have blood clotting problems at the micro level that cannot otherwise be diagnosed by other methods or scans. High levels of D-dimer have been observed both in patients infected by the COVID virus and in the vaccine recipients. And by the way, there are many peer-reviewed studies showing an association between high levels of D-dimer and higher titers of the spike-binding antibody that forms in response to COVID virus particles, and this is also related to increased lung pathology. There's no currently accepted treatment for treating post-COVID vaccine injury that has reached any consensus. However, Nature Medicine, that's a major orthodox peer-reviewed journal, published an article based upon an Oxford University study claiming that micro blood clotting may be contributing to the brain fog and chronic fatigue following some COVID infections. They did this study by looking at D-dimer test results because people with high D-dimer levels are frequently complaining about loss of memory. Also, a second protein, fibrinogen, that is produced by the liver causes clotting in order to stop bleeding. Now, patients during active COVID infection also were found to have elevated fibrinogen levels and report memory impairment. Just remember, the genetic sequencing of the COVID vaccine in part is to mimic the COVID infection. Therefore, adverse effects of a wild SARS-2 infection should be similar to adverse vaccine-related symptoms and conditions. But there are good things you can do. There's a whole group of top medical doctors and scientists who came together and created some protocols. And what we have to know is that the SARS-2 virus spike protein stays in the body, and we don't know how long it'll last. There are no studies. And the body is unable to break it down by itself effectively. You know, though we were told you were going to get injected, it's going to stay in the your deltoid muscle in the arm, and it'll be gone in a few days. Not true. Months later, that damn vaccine is still in your arm. But Dr. Peter McCullough and his colleagues, like Dr. Pierre Corey, propose a three-pronged regime to degrade the COVID spike protein. The first is detoxification, which has been peer-reviewed in a medical journal. It's intended to dissolve spike protein-induced thrombosis. And it includes nanokinase, N-A-T-T-O-K-I-N-A-S-E, 2,000 units a day, twice a day. And that's a naturally occurring enzyme. It's found in Japanese fermented natto cheese that cleaves the spike protein to inhibit blood clotting. And it can degrade the fibrinolysis-resistant fibrin form of the spike protein. And nanokinase is not recommended if the patient is taking antiplatelet or anticoagulant drugs because it can cause excess bleeding. Then you have bromelain, B-R-O-M-E-L-A-I-N, 500 milligrams once a day. This is an enzyme isolated from pineapple stems, the pithy, non-chewing middle of a pineapple. And it's been shown to modulate the production of pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory compounds and has an anticoagulant effect. It can upregulate fibrinolysis, and a couple studies show that it can block the SARS virus infection of the cells. And then you have curcumin at 500 milligrams twice a day. And once again, I said earlier in the show, curcumin should be in everyone's medicine cabinet. It's good against multiple viruses. It can inhibit cells' entry of the COVID virus by blocking a spike protein binding sites. It also has anti-inflammatory and anticoagulant properties. And together, if you took curcumin and bromelain, it would help inhibit the spike protein via the ACE2 receptor, which prevents the viral spike protein from binding to a cell. And in addition, it helps downregulate the NFKB, which is nuclear factor kappa B, signaling pathway that is induced by the spike protein and thus suppresses inflammatory molecules. Otherwise, you could just keep reproducing this darn spike protein indefinitely. At this moment, we don't have an end date when it stops. And the more that spike protein in people with autoimmune disease keeps reproducing itself, the weaker and weaker and weaker you're going to become until your organs collapse. And frontline doctors and others recommend methylene blue, for improving memory and cognitive function following the SARS infection, as well as the COVID vaccines. And but just make sure that you purchase the methylene blue that has been manufactured by standards for human consumption, because it also is used in industry for many purposes as well. Get it from a reputable person. And from our own research, we would include shikimic acid, S-C-H-I-K-M-I-C, which has long been recognized as a very effective biochemical metabolite in plants that can reduce platelet aggregation and clotting. And you could use star anise, pine needle extract, and fennel. Brew it as a tea. That's one. And quercetin's very good in this ability also. So those are just some things. And I'm looking at the clock, and wow, we're out of time. I want to say goodbye to our WB audience. You're going to the news. We'll continue on to the top of the hour at PRN.live. So give real quick, how do they reach you? Real quick.
Okay, 903-881-7008 or WHNN at AOL.com. That's WHNN at AOL.com.
Good. Also, I was told that we had a testimonial for the anti-aging skin cream. And if they have it ready there in the studio, I'd like to play it. I haven't heard it myself. So let's hear what this person has to say about their experience.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dee Combs-Meadows. I'm a psychotherapist, sex therapist, author, media personality, and host of the Ask Dee Show, which airs live every Monday afternoon from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the Progressive Radio Network. As a woman who spends a lot of time in front of the camera, I have to confess that I have tried dozens of creams and potions that promise to keep me looking ageless. I recently began using Dr. Gary Null's Ageless Miracle Cream, and I was really impressed to discover that Dr. Null and his team spent 5 years researching and analyzing the medical science behind skin rejuvenation in order to formulate this very special and unique cream. Well, I've been using the cream for 1 month, and I can definitely see a difference. My skin feels softer and firmer with no irritations or redness. So if you are looking for a natural moisturizer that really works, Ageless Answer is your answer.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you for that. Again, it was unsolicited, and we're getting a lot of positive response on that. Let me just mention in the 3 minutes we have left that we are now officially going forward with our anti-aging study. I tried to get funding so we could make it last a month, but that was not successful. I'm trying now to get funding so we can make it last a third week and get some of the expenses paid for by some foundations. We're in the final talks of a foundation that's going to pay for our supplementation, which is a special supplementation. It's not normal supplementation, and blood workups, including two sets of blood workups. One that measures all of your anti-aging markers in the body, and the other one that measures your DNA methylation before and after. This time, however, we're doing one study on the day that you get there, but the next blood workup we're doing a year later. We're going to spend a year in post emphasis, meaning we're going to work on a weekly basis to get people to stay on board, because the study itself works. The protocols work. We've proven it. In fact, our newest pre-pub study was just reviewed. It was passed, and now we've got it in publication, in a major publication. They'll accept or reject it. They'll send it out for peer review if they accept it, and then it'll be published. We just had one published 3 months ago from a previous study, but it took us a long time to get the results of this in, and it was really phenomenal results. So if you're interested in being in a study, where you spend, at this moment, you'll spend 2 weeks on campus. It may change if I do a GoFundMe or it gets funding for someone. Then it might go to 3 weeks, even a month, but at least 2 weeks. And then we follow you over a period of time to make sure you're sticking with it. And if you have questions, we'll address those questions. And what it is, it's different than just a health support group. It's different than, because the reason I do it on campus is because when I was doing my health support groups every week, for example, you'd come for 3 hours or 4 hours to a health support meeting, and we would address your questions, and we gave you diaries to keep. We took blood work up, medical exam before and at the end of the study. And we had a very high success rate. That's because the constant intervention in the issues, the problems of a person's life, helping them solve these problems. But everybody's got different problems. But when they're alone at home, we have found they're far less likely to ask for help or to keep to a protocol. So we want to see that whatever you learn on campus that helps you, you're able to continue that at home. So I'm designing this protocol different. This is not going to be the same protocol. So it'll be a lot of new stuff. But the fact you're going to be in one of the most beautiful environments in America with a phenomenal staff, it's taken us about 1,400 hours of donating our time and effort just to get you into this and make sure that it always choreographs so it runs smoothly. The best foods, the best meals. We're bringing in a chef that's at the Michelin star restaurants to do vegan gourmet meals. I have all original recipes I've given him. Lots of workshops, but I'm emphasizing some workshops more than others because I see what people need. Because after the fact, you find out which workshop they paid attention to, which they benefited from, which not, or less so. So if this interests you, give Luann a call because she's got to make sure it's right for you. The last time we had over 700 people respond, and we selected 23. Because a lot of people, well, I've got terminal illness, I'm going to come. No. I got her in a nursing home. I want to take her out of the nursing home and bring her down so you can do. No. It's got to be a person who wants to extend their lifespan in a healthy way, prevent the diseases and infirmaries that come with typical average aging, and be able to live a longer, healthier, happier life with joy and purpose. If that's your motivation, then welcome aboard. Call Luann. Luann, give them the number, please.
Surely, 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Give me a call.
Thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for one of the most powerful programs with Jeremiah on PRN. Have a nice day, everyone.